Wednesday, July 25th, mark the 10th anniversary of Puerto Rico as a Commonwealth. On the occasion of the celebration, an exchange of correspondence between Governor Luis Muñoz Marín of Puerto Rico and President Kennedy was made public. Governor Muñoz wrote to President Kennedy, informing the president of the governor's intention of asking the Puerto Rican legislature to enact a law providing for a plebiscite on the island's future political status. President Kennedy agreed with Governor Muñoz, saying that the time had come for Puerto Ricans to express a preference for statehood, independence, or a revised and permanent Commonwealth relationship with the United States. Riverside Radio WRVR has invited three leaders from the Puerto Rican Committee to discuss the political future of the island of Puerto Rico. We will hear from Mr. Joseph Montserrat, Director of the Migration Division of the Department of Labor of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, Mr. Juan Antonio Correter, President of Acción Patriótica Unitaria, a party advocating independence for Puerto Rico, and Mr. Ramon Martinez, a candidate for Congress from New York City and an advocate for statehood for Puerto Rico. The moderator for this discussion is our UN reporter, Walter Nixon. Here is Mr. Nixon.
Perhaps the best way to begin this discussion would be to have you, Mr. Montserrat, talk about and inform us a little bit about the present situation. The Commonwealth government as a free, closely associated government to the United States.
Well, I think the only way we can talk about the present is to talk a little bit about the past. Puerto Rico was discovered in 1493. By Christopher Columbus, and by way of a commercial, I might say that it's the only place today flying the American flag where Columbus ever actually set foot. It was a colony of Spain for some 400 years. At one time, the people of Puerto Rico were, in effect, citizens of Spain. The people of Puerto Rico had representatives in the court of Cortes. But of course, in those days, when you say the people of Puerto Rico, what you really meant were those with certain property and incomes, because those were the only ones who had any voice. The people of Puerto Rico were concerned about lack of opportunity to do some things for themselves as a colony of Spain, and there was a political agitation early in the last century. And by 1898, because of all of the disquieting activity of Spain losing her entire empire here, Puerto Rico was always a rather a place that was very much cared for because of its strategic location, etc., by Spain, so that by 1898, what was called an autonomous letter, I guess is the best literal translation that I can give to it, was given to Puerto Rico, which permitted Puerto Rico to establish some of its own trading laws, and it gave a certain amount of autonomy. But that autonomy was never really tested, because some 3 months after it came into effect, came along the Spanish-American War in 1898. As a result of the Treaty of Paris, Puerto Rico became an unincorporated territory of Puerto Rico. And if I may, I'd like to dwell on this concept of unincorporated for just 1 second, because I think that some of us perhaps don't realize that within the American Federated Union, there are historically been only two kinds of political entities. One was the, incorporated territory, which were territories before they became states. And an incorporated territory, the people in the territory had all of the responsibility of citizenship, except that they did not vote, and except that the president named the governor, etc., etc. In the case of Puerto Rico in 1898, however, because of the island's economic situation, Puerto Rico couldn't possibly be an incorporated territory. That plus the fact that no one quite knew what they wanted to do with Puerto Rico at those times anyway, as Harding Davis says in a book of his around this period of time. So that a new concept was invented. The other one is the Federated State. And in the case of Puerto Rico, a new form of government, in effect, was set up, which was called the unincorporated territory. And Puerto Rico, then in 1900, the Four-Acre Act was passed, which gave Puerto Rico a government that Puerto Rico is primarily run by the War Department until then, etc. By 1917, the Jones Act came in, and this is the act that gave Puerto Rican citizenship. But during all of this period of time, of course, the governor was appointed by the President of the United States. The people of Puerto Rico had very little say. They had a legislature, but the President of the United States could veto anything that the people of Puerto Rico did. And in Puerto Rico, there was a great deal of unhappiness about this. Well, by 1938, some new things began to be interjected into the political life of Puerto Rico, and historically, the political parties of Puerto Rico had been primarily either for independence or for statehood. And in 1938, with the formation of a new party, the idea was that, well, look, this is all right, these conversations, but we're not doing anything for the people now. And so the party was formed, and it's decided to set the political issue for aside a while. And then, however, this couldn't be continued because Puerto Rico was still, people of Puerto Rico were still colonials, and we didn't want to be a colonial people. And in the light of the role of the United States in the world affairs, it certainly should not be that the United States have colonial people. So that the party in power then, and party in power now, the Popular Democratic Party, and its leaders, looking upon the political situation of Puerto Rico, they believed that, number one, Puerto Rico could not afford to be independent. That for a number of reasons, would be outside of the trade barrier, any number of reasons of these sorts, we could not afford to be independent. On the other side, we felt that the same was true in relation to statehood, that we could not afford to be a state, number one, and number two, that there are some cultural and other reasons why perhaps we should not be. But certainly we could not remain as a colonial people. So that since the problems of the world have probably never been solved because people always think in terms of either or, we in Puerto Rico decided that, well, it doesn't have to be either or. Man is a creative being and he should create. And so a new concept was created, a new concept which was called the Commonwealth, or directly translated from Spanish, the Free Associated State. And Puerto Rico is very much like a state in that it has a governor elected by the people, a legislature with a lower house and an upper house, a Supreme Court. But that for the first time now, the people of Puerto Rico would elect their own governor. They would have their own constitution, and they would be able to run their own internal affairs, and that this would be in the form of a compact between the people of Puerto Rico and the Congress of the United States. And whereas in 1898 an army marched in and said, you belong to us, and the people of Puerto Rico had no voice in the matter, with the referendum, not the referendum, but with the vote on the Constitution of Puerto Rico and the association with Puerto Rico, it was then felt the people of Puerto Rico had now entered into a compact and they were part of the United States because they had decided to do so. And this is what is called the Commonwealth. Just one more item on this. All of us feel that the Commonwealth is a new form of political entity. It is a status in and of itself. We believe it is, in fact, a pioneering step to what President Kennedy called the need for a declaration of interdependence. And we believe that we began to demonstrate how the most powerful nation in the world and one of the smallest geographic areas in the world could begin to resolve a problem of colonialism. In very simple terms, and I hope my colleagues will agree on at least some of the accuracy of the history, if not perhaps the emphasis of my words. This is how the Commonwealth came into being now, and the issue, of course, now is what will the people of Puerto Rico decide in terms of voting.
In the exchange of letters between the Commonwealth's governor, Luis Muñoz Marín, and President Kennedy, there were three alternatives posed to be decided by the people of Puerto Rico: a continuation in modified form of the present Commonwealth status, a second alternative would be the possibility of statehood, and the third would be complete independence. Actually, this choice has never been previously given to the people, I believe, in the In the prior voting, it was on the question of the ratification of the Constitution as drawn up by the Puerto Rican Constitutional Convention.
Well, that'd be some argument on that. I guess we will have some, but some of us feel that the fact that there are three parties running in Puerto Rico and that each party represented a form of political association, that it could very well be that if the people wanted independence, they would have voted for it. If they wanted statehood, they would have voted for it. But by and large, they voted for the Commonwealth status. Some people say that this is not true, but I'm raising the issue that people have had an opportunity to vote in that sense.
That every time there is an election, in effect, you are voting upon this question.
Well, this is what some of us believe.
Yeah.
I'm sure my colleagues here wouldn't agree with me, but I'm saying this is what many of us do believe.
One of those who has been long identified with the movement for complete independence is Mr. Corretjer. I wonder if you would give us your views on this question of the alternatives for Puerto Rico.
I believe Muñoz Marín and President Kennedy's statement of policy in respect to Puerto Rico, and especially President Kennedy, is profoundly mistaken. The plebiscite is not a juridical instrument to free colonies. The plebiscite is an instrumental invented to settle on the sovereignty of two nations, of two different potencies, which are in dispute of a frontier territory. That was why the plebiscite was created. So, by necessity, the plebiscite is an instrument of annexation. And that is the role ascribed to the projected plebiscite on Puerto Rico, that full annexation, complete annexation of Puerto Rico to the United States might come through the means of the Republican Party, which is openly for a statehood, or through the gradualist position of Muñoz Marín of permanent association with the United States. Furthermore, I was surprised to see President Kennedy ignoring a resolution of the United Nations to which the United States government is a co-signatory, which excludes annexation as an alternative for independence in the solution of the colonial problem. The proposition of annexation, either through statehood or the continuation of the present status, more or less developed, will by necessity brought the destruction of Puerto Rican culture and the substitution of the Spanish language in Puerto Rico. So it will brought into Puerto Rico by necessity this new incorporation of the concept of genocide, which was adopted by the United Nations with the signature of the American representative in the United Nations.
Inasmuch as you had mentioned the position of the Republicans on this and in favor of statehood as the alternative, it might be good at this point to call upon Mr. Martinez.
Of course, all of us in Puerto Rico feel that there are only two worthy solutions, ultimate solutions to this problem. One is either independence or statehood. Even the people who favor statehood state that the other alternative to statehood is independence. We don't believe in this hybrid that we have here, a state without being a state. But the question of independence can be discarded for two principal reasons. In the first place, the people of Puerto Rico repeatedly have repudiated independence. That is shown by the fact that even at the last election, I think out of the entire vote, it's only 3%. Of the vote was for independence. But there's another aspect of this thing that nobody ever thinks about. In the question of determining this final status of Puerto Rico, everybody has thought only in terms of what is best for Puerto Rico with nobody thinking of what is best for the United States in relation to Puerto Rico. Because the interest of the United States in that Caribbean island is also to be considered. What has been peddled by the present administration as a novel idea, as something unique that had never been thought of before, that is not correct. The question of the Associated Free State, to make the literal translation, was being debated long before Governor Muñoz Marín had even returned to Puerto Rico. He was just a young man around here. Puerto Ricans always said either statehood or independence. In 1905, at the Olimpo Hotel in Santurce, in one of the conventions of the what was called at that time a new party that had come up, engineered by Dr. Matienzo Cintrón, which was a party supposed to be a union of all Puerto Ricans to come together and ask for one same thing. In this union, all formulas came in there. But in the convention of 1905 at the Olimpo Hotel, the independence plank was put into this new party. What we called it at that time the Base Quinta, the fifth plank. And then was when independence, and the man who spearheaded that was one of our Puerto Rican intellectuals of the past generation, José de Diego. He was the man who really went out for independence, all out, completely out. Now, this question that has come up, oh, by the way, then in 1917 came the question of citizenship for Puerto Rico. Mr. Montserrat has been correct in this historical summation here towards the last. But here's one aspect of this thing.
I was correct all along. I just wasn't inclusive.
Yeah. This is one aspect of this thing that hasn't been cleared up. The question of incorporation. The Supreme Court on various occasions has said that a territory of the United States cannot be incorporated unless it is by express act of Congress. All right. This hasn't happened with reference to Puerto Rico. But this is what has happened. The mere fact, and this is a thing that I hope someday to be able to bring up before the United States Supreme Court, the mere fact of making birth on Puerto Rican soil the determining factor of citizenship, as far as Puerto Ricans is concerned, that automatically, impliedly incorporates Puerto Rico to the United States. And I'll tell you why. Congress has no authority to grant citizenship by birth on soil, on American soil, other than incorporated soil, according to the Constitution. All persons born within the United States and subject to the jurisdiction, that's the way the Constitution reads. Congress has no business going outside of the Constitution to grant citizenship to Puerto Ricans by birth on Puerto Rican soil, unless impliedly that soil is incorporated, forms part of the juridical entity of the United States. And that point has never been discussed before the Supreme Court. Now,
except that Congress did, by act of Congress, create a new form of territory and under the Constitution as the territory.
No, just a minute. Now, this question of the Commonwealth. There are three distortions with reference to this. In the first place, this concept of a pact. There is no pact. The only thing about it is that we had a very limited form of government. Congress offered to Puerto Rico, on the formula of the Commonwealth, a greater form of self-government. Now, who's going to turn Santa Claus down? You wouldn't turn Santa Claus down.
And especially so after you ask him for the present.
There was no choice except the alternative of remaining as you were or accepting a greater degree of self-government. So there was no pact and there was no choice. The other thing is this. Puerto Rico has been brainwashed. Puerto Ricans have been brainwashed into believing that economically statehood is disastrous for Puerto Rico. That is not so. On the contrary, Puerto Rico's economy now is based on sugar, tobacco, coffee, and fruits. Watch this now. It has a resident commissioner in Congress with very limited voice and no vote whatsoever. In the meantime, Puerto Rico has to be in competition on sugar with Louisiana and with the big sugar growers of the Middle West. It has to be in competition on tobacco with the two Carolinas, Virginia and Connecticut. It has to be in competition on fruits with Florida, Texas, and California, with no representation in Congress to protect that economy. See, that's the part that is disastrous.
Ramon, besides, I think you're making some, I'm sorry, I have no, to, you're saying some things which are simply not true.
Let me finish this.
Puerto Rico is no longer an agricultural country. No. It's got its greatest income comes from manufacturing, and commerce and manufacturing together are almost three times the amount that comes in from agriculture. From agriculture, in 1961, we had $200 million. From manufacturing, $320 million. And from commerce, $249 million.
This is American economy in Puerto Rico, not a Puerto Rican economy.
Wait a minute. Now, remember this, that the basic economy
was agriculture.
Just a minute now. Now you made your statement. Now you let me counter you. The basic economy of Puerto Rico is still agriculture. It's still living on an agrarian economy. Just now, with the question of sugar, the sugar growers of Puerto Rico are raising the devil because they lowered the quota from 1,240,000 tons to 1,140,000 tons.
And so are sugar growers in a lot of other places.
No, but even your industries that you have in Puerto Rico depend for their raw material on the agriculture, on the soil.
There is no raw materials in Puerto Rico.
The industrial economy of Puerto Rico is not Puerto Rican, it's American. American absentee capital established in Puerto Rico for different reasons. I want just to go back to this historical process pointed out by my two distinguished friends. My friend stated that only the Puerto Rican interest is being followed in Puerto Rican politics, and always when it is talk about Puerto Rico, it is the Puerto Rican interest what is in mind, and that they have to have in mind the interest of the United States also. I believe that since 1898 to this very day, what has been taken care for are the interests of the United States in Puerto Rico and the Caribbean through Puerto Rico. That the abandonment of Puerto Rican interests by the main forces in political domination, in political parties and leadership, has been to, for the benefit and to follow the interest of the United States, and on occasions, and little, the interest of Puerto Rico.
I think Mr. Montserrat would not quite agree with you on that.
I wonder what we're talking about when we talk about Puerto Rico. I mean, are we talking about mountains and hills and valleys and rivers? Or are we talking about the people who live there?
The people of Puerto Rico.
Then if we're talking about the people who live in Puerto Rico, let's see something about this question of interest. Why, Ramon, Puerto Rico cannot industrialize on the basis of its soil because it has nothing under its soil under which it can industrialize. We have no coal, we have no steel, there is no iron. We have no exploitable natural resources. And the only way in which we have been able to bring about a change from an agricultural economy into an industrial economy to take care of the people of Puerto Rico. One of our great composers wrote a song which both of you know very much and very well, which almost became the hymn of Puerto Rico. It was the Lamento Borincano, and lament is the word which you all understand, and Borincano is the Indian word for Puerto Rico. And the fact of the matter is that our people in the 30s were starving to death. The fact of the matter is that in 1940, as late as 1940, the per capita income of Puerto Rico was $121, and that something had to be done about this. So that everything that's been done in Puerto Rico to date has been done with the interest of improving the lot of the people who live there.
But in 1930, the people of the United States were starving too.
Yes, but there is a relativity between the starvations, and we were starving more than they were.
Because they were the masters.
Wait a minute, just a minute. Now, on this thing of this industrialization, you know, I just wrote Senator Byrd a letter. You know that they are planning now to extend the income tax laws to fugitive corporations that take refuge in tax haven countries. And you know that the governor was here trying to intercede to see that Puerto Rico would not be included because these corporations would have to pay income tax, and then they probably, that the industrial setup of the island would be hurt thereby. Now look.
What would happen if we were
just a minute now. You just hold it for a minute. The degree of industrialization that has been accomplished through the new formula of government, or not through the new formula of government, but through the tax incentive that is given to new to corporations that come there and extend subsidiary activities on the island, has been predicated during the whole time on the proposition that Puerto Rico is a tax haven for fugitive corporations. Now, I resent that. I resent for my island to be taken as a sanctuary for tax dodging industries, and because it's predicating the prosperity, the economic prosperity of the island on fiscal delinquency, and that's what Byrd is now after. Reaching out after those corporations and individuals who hide and take capital out of the country, hide in these tax exempt lands. Now, you still, I'm not saying that there hasn't been some industrialization in Puerto Rico, but I am saying that the basic economy of Puerto Rico is still agrarian. And I didn't say either that it was dependent on the mineral resources of there. You brought in coal and iron and all those things. I said agrarian, and when I mean agrarian, I mean purely agricultural.
Puerto Rico could be planted with rice from stem to stern, and we wouldn't be able to grow enough rice to feed our people. We can't live on the basis of the land alone. And in this modern world, an island, the island of Puerto Rico is the most densely populated agricultural area in
well,
this
I'm
sense of the world.
I am happy with
I am not unhappy about it either, because we are wonderful people, and the more of us in the world,
good,
the better.
Good,
but
I'm
that,
glad I agree
but
with
because
you.
We're wonderful people, and because the more of us in the world, the better, and there are only about 3 million of us, but because of this, I want us to be able to have 3 square meals a day. And I want us to be able to live in the kind of dignity that the man should live in the 20th century.
Well, who's denying
and
that? Nobody's denying
it. You are denying it in the sense in which that if we did not have the kind of fiscal structure that we presently have, and incidentally, the reason why and the kind of tax exemption that is offered in Puerto Rico is not what you're saying. From the 4-Acre Act on, the people of Puerto Rico, anyone living in Puerto Rico, deriving income in Puerto Rico, does not pay federal taxes. This was established then. We did not create anything new. The only thing that we exempt people from taxes from is from the Puerto Rican state taxes. Anyone going into Puerto Rico, any company going into Puerto Rico on their own, with or without government help, any Puerto Rican living in Puerto Rico does not pay federal taxes.
Just, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought, just a minute. I'm glad, don't get away from that point. I'm glad you brought that up. Governor Muñoz Marín was here last year, and in one of his visits, he brought up this very same thing. And I said to him, I asked him at that time, couldn't Puerto Rico give this same tax incentive to corporations under statehood? Now, the reason why I say that is because there are several states in the South that do that very same thing, that give tax exemption to corporations that come. That's why so many corporations have left the North here and have gone down in the South. The same tax incentive can be given. I'm so glad you fell right into my trap.
That's
the same tax incentive can be given under statehood that is being given now under the Commonwealth.
It cannot.
I want to revert to this interest in the Puerto Rican people. Everybody has always been in politics trying to make the Puerto Rican people happy. Well, recent statistics shows too that the index of violence, of personal violence in Puerto Rico, is one of the highest in the world. I am not happy about that.
Neither am I.
To the extent that the index of homicide is among the four highest in the world, in all the world, in Puerto Rico. And still more, and this is what is very serious, for each Puerto Rican that kills another in our homeland, three commit suicide. Where is the happiness of the people?
This is a situation which is facing, unfortunately, all of the modern world, number one. Number two, these indices which you are referring to, and I'm sorry, I don't have the data here, have dropped and are dropping. I know where they're from. I know where they're from, but I am saying that they're statistics that go back a little bit, and they've changed.
That's in 1960.
But the point is, I think, important to remember that the highest rate of this is here in the United States, and it happens to be in Houston, Texas. But that's besides the point. The point, it seems to me, right here is the following. I'd like to get back to something Mr. Martinez says, because I'm afraid Mr. Martinez doesn't understand what's happening. And I think we ought to make it very clear what it is that we're talking about. The people in Puerto Rico this year will spend a little over $300,000. Now, this is $300 million in their for their capital expenses, for the running of the island. These $300 million come from the people of Puerto Rico in their payment of taxes to the state government. They can afford to pay this rate of tax because we only pay taxes to the state. The per capita income in Puerto Rico is the highest that it's ever been in history, and yet it is only $673 per person. The poorest state in the United States, which is Mississippi, and which is the poorest state in more ways than one, still has a per capita income of $1,500. Now, if we in Puerto Rico had to and were a federated state and had to pay federal income tax, our tax dollar, which would be usable and available to provide the schools and the services in the hospital in Puerto Rico, would be cut by about $157 million, which is quite a big chunk to take out of these $300 million. Furthermore, the state taxes that we would then have to charge to be able to support the government of Puerto Rico would have to be much lower, because obviously we're not going to be able to pay two taxes with a per capita income of $673. So that I think that we ought to look, and when we try to compare Puerto Rico with some of the southern states that are asking or are permitting tax exemption, we're comparing apples with pears. We're not making the same kinds of comparisons. And I think we ought to be clear on what we're saying before we make statements like
this. May I ask you a question? If you have a per capita income of $676, don't you have a tax exemption of $600, which only allows you then a per capita payment of tax of $76, and where, that is to say, for each individual, and where a man has a family of two and three in the family, there's an exemption.
If you're talking just about a minute family now, income, it's a different price.
Then, where you have families, the exemption is multiplied by the number of individuals in the family. The poor people wouldn't be paying the tax. The ones who would be paying the tax would be the rich corporations who are getting fat from tax exemption, and also the individuals who are also enjoying that income tax exemption.
Well, I know that this is a point of view which is shared by many of our friends from other areas in Latin America. One of the South American ambassadors to the UN was telling me some time ago that as far as his country was concerned, he would just as soon have the same sort of tax advantages as Puerto Rico has and forget about any other participation in the Alliance for Progress. That he thought it was a tremendous advantage which Puerto Rico enjoys. Certainly, however, that would not continue, I take it, under a situation of independence, certainly. And it would be difficult to see how it
necessary. Would not be necessary under an independent regime. And what Puerto Rico needs to make its people happy, to begin with, and I go back to the statistics on suicide and violence, is assuredness of themselves, a liquidation of this crisis of identity, which creates a collective paranoia in the people. Two languages, two nations, two leaders, two flags, two everything. Well, it is a deliberate creation of a split collective personality. The way to issue that assuredness of themselves in the people of Puerto Rico, the only way is independence.
Can I say just one thing?
I know what you want to say. May I anticipate? The cause of this project of plebiscite, this is caused and has been produced by the overwhelming victory of anti-colonialism through the world. The United States is facing the responsibility of staying alone on the world as a colonial power. Of course, this development, this world development, Puerto Rico is part not of the United States, it's part of the world, it's part of mankind. This development has to have its impact in Puerto Rico without any doubt. These American forces that has been mentioned by my distinguished friends going to Puerto Rico with factories and displacing the Puerto Ricans from business to the point that in the last 10 years of 500 million of inversion, of capital inverted in Puerto Rico, only 100 million are Puerto Ricans. And 50 of that million, of those 100 million, is government investment to create facilities for American inversionists.
Is this like infrastructure investment, yes, and things of that sort?
I assure you that this development is creating in Puerto Rico an anti-American feeling that never existed before.
Oh, God, I've got to disagree with this in two ways. Can I make just one thing? I think we've been talking about...
And we're going to have a mass revolutionary independence movement in Puerto Rico very shortly.
Well, this is...
And Mr. Kennedy's statement is a provocation to revolt.
I think two things ought to be said very quickly. We've been talking about colonial status in the United Nations. The United Nations, in its Trust Territory Committee, has said that Puerto Rico is not a colony of the United States, number one. Number two, the people of Puerto Rico, in election after election, and just to give you an idea of how these elections have operated, have continuously voted less and less and less in favor of independence, to the point where, because a party must poll a minimum amount of votes to remain on the ballot, in the last election, the Independence Party had to go off the ballot. So if you compare the number of votes for the Commonwealth status, which is in association with the United States, and add to that the vote for statehood, which is even wants closer association with the United States, I think it would be very difficult to say that the people of Puerto Rico are leaning in any great numbers, by any extent of the imagination, toward independence. Of course, I think the answer is a very simple one. We're going to have a plebiscite, and some remarks were made about what a plebiscite is, and I don't quite understand something. Here are three, in round numbers, 2.5 million people. They have three choices before them, and either one believes in the right of the people to make a choice, or one does not. If one does not believe in the right of the people to make a choice, and if one is afraid of the right of the people to make a choice, then one is going to say that the people cannot make a choice, and one is going to say that a plebiscite will not decide the issue, because obviously one would lose under those conditions.
Here is an opportunity for the people to decide what the issues will be. And it will be placed to them simply. What do you want? Independence? Do you want to become a state? Or do you want to remain in the Commonwealth status with an expansion of this status because it is an imperfect status as it is now? It still does contain some remnants of colonialism, which should be and must be eliminated, and toward which we have aimed to eliminate it. And we're talking the island as if this is something static. We're talking about a dynamic area. Certainly there's only been $100 million invested by the people of Puerto Rico in its own growth. But there weren't that kind of capital available. There isn't $500 million within the people of Puerto Rico to continue to invest it. And you bring in capital to stimulate capital, and more and more and more. The emphasis as this dynamics goes on, and it's only been going on now for some 15 or 20 years, how can we expect our little island in 15 to 20 years to come out of the 19th century into the 20th century and be able to have its people invest to the extent that we want them? The investment of Puerto Ricans by Puerto Ricans in Puerto Rico will continue to grow as this process continues. If we become an independent nation, this process is killed. If we become a state, the process is also killed because, Mr. Martinez, there won't be any factories in Puerto Rico to pay the income taxes which you say that these people getting rich in Puerto Rico will pay. They will leave Puerto Rico and there will be no industrialization program.
It's almost impossible, apparently.
Just saying, let me pick up here. Just saying, give me a chance. And yet, in the last election, I believe, it's shown a growth for the statehood party.
Yes.
I think in the last election they got about 32% of the vote in contrast to perhaps 24% for their candidate 4 years earlier.
Well, there's one very strange thing between these independentistas and these statehooders. They either want to become completely independent or they vote for the statehood party. Or the statehood people say, we want to become completely federated or we want to become completely disunited. Those votes were added from one party to the other, as you can see.
There are two points that I want to clarify here. One is with reference to the plebiscite, and the other is with reference to the culture of Puerto Rico. With reference to the plebiscite, I would be opposed to a plebiscite now.
So do I.
Until the people, you see, the party that's in power now has had the advantage of indoctrinating the people. It has had all the means of indoctrinating, just like we are now. All the statistics are over there. We don't have any statistics. You see, they have the advantage of having indoctrinated the people. Having indoctrinated the people into the belief that statehood is disastrous. Statehood has never had a fair chance to be discussed in all of its aspects to the people of Puerto Rico. And until the mind of the people has been disabused, they even went to this extreme by saying that Puerto Rico couldn't become independent because Puerto Rico couldn't afford to pay for a battleship. Every state of the Union has to contribute a battleship to the United States Navy. It's such ignorant things as that, you know? Those are things that the people, the unlettered people, believe, see? That comes because of the practice of
Come
the
on,
Navy.
I refuse to have you insult our people's intelligence.
No. The people have been misled.
That's what
we're trying to do. That's the reason why we want this thing fully debated before any plebiscite is called for. Now, that is naturally buttressed by the fact that the Navy had the practice of naming battleships after different states, you know? You had the New Jersey, you had the New York, and so forth, and it led the people to the belief that that was true. Then the other thing that they have been led to believe is the fact that they would pay such outrageous income taxes that it would break their backbones. There's no such a thing. The people are losing now from grants in aid by the federal government much more than if they had their full representation in Congress.
This is not
now,
true.
Now, just a minute. Now, a study has been made. And
prove
I'm sorry
your
that
statement.
I couldn't find it. This thing came on such short notice, I would have found it and brought it here and given you the figures. Now, the other thing is with reference to the culture. I am opposed to the complete loss of the Latin background and Spanish culture in Puerto Rico, even with statehood. There is no need for Puerto Rico to lose its language. There's no need for Puerto Rico to lose its culture. There's no need for Puerto Rico to lose its culture. There's no need for Puerto Rico to lose its Latin flavor because it becomes a state of the union. Because I'm going to give you one example in the world, and that is the example of the province of Quebec in Canada. They have a French culture They have retained their language. They have retained their culture, and still they're just as good a Canadian as any born in Ontario.
But why don't we come to the United States, Ramon? In the United States, there's a state like New Mexico.
Just a minute.
That has two official languages and culture.
I hadn't finished. Okay. Now, I am in favor. You see, there is quite advantage, not only for Puerto Rico, but for the United States, to develop these two cultures parallel one with the other. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having a Latin state as part of the Union, of the Federated Union of the United States. It would be to the advantage of the United States, because in that way, Puerto Rico could be the best interpreter between the two cultures.
It will take 200 years for
between
that.
Between the Latin culture and this other.
200 years for that.
English and Spanish are the two most important languages today in the Western Hemisphere. And there's no reason why Puerto Rico cannot develop both.
Puerto Rico is a nation. Quebec is a province. Puerto Rico is a nation. Such a definite nation, so deliberately inclined to certain road, to follow certain road toward itself, that the United States would have to amend its constitution, to call for a new constitutional convention to create a multinational state. Forget about the federal state. And Puerto Rico could not be incorporated into the United States federal state because it is a nation. A nation that has its culture, its language, its psychological characteristics, and that only 8 years ago, 10 years ago, or 8 years ago, in name of Puerto Rican independence, the House of the President of the United States was attacked and Congress was attacked. Can a nation directed by a statement, by people that are thinking in the good of its own people and of its own state, incorporate into the American federal state, such a different nation which volition toward independence could have such an explosive expression? Puerto Rico is not Alaska and it's not Hawaii. Neither Alaska or Hawaii were nations. New Mexico was no Mexico. Arizona was no nation. We are a nation, and we cannot be part of the United States.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Corrette here. Do you think that, however desirable you might consider it to be, that either statehood or commonwealth in a modified form would involve a cost in some of these material benefits which have accrued during this past 10 years, Operation Bootstrap and all that? Do you think that it would...
Well, independence means a reorganization of the nation. Its first normal, natural organization, you know, its history. It is almost impossible, apparently, for many people to believe, to think economically. Having envisioned an independent Puerto Rico,
even the independents have difficulty because they haven't come up yet with any kind of a program that would show the people of Puerto Rico how they could exist economically under an independent nation. And just let me point out something. Puerto Rico, this question of nations, Texas was an independent nation.
No, it was not.
Oh, yes, it was. And so was Hawaii when it petitioned the United States to become a part of Hawaii.
Hawaii was not a nation either.
Well, it was
we have to see, no, in terms, not in, in political terms,
all right,
but on historical and anthropological terms, sociological terms. Hawaii was not a nation when it was invaded by the United States.
It was not invaded.
No, it was not.
Hawaii petitioned.
Yes, I corrected myself on that.
Yeah, voluntary annexation.
Fine, I corrected myself on that. Hawaii was never a nation. And Texas was never a nation. Texas was taken from Mexico through a political imperialist maneuver of the United States government.
But when Texas fought, it was the Lone Star State, and it was a nation. And the whole founding of the United States was an amalgamation of 13 independent unions, and the whole development of the concept of the federated of a federal system of government comes from the fact that we had 13 independent and separate situations. And the whole reading of the Federalist Papers and the whole development of American history, which unfortunately so many of us don't know and forget in our own background, in our own past, would show that this is exactly the way the United States of America was founded. It was formed, and what we are talking about when we talk about the concept of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, I agree that it could very well be that if we were to become a federated state, we would lose our culture. And I certainly feel that we should not do this, because I think this is in the best interest of the United States. And I think that Puerto Rico today is precisely doing what it could never do as a state. It is doing as a commonwealth. And it is because of this role which Puerto Rico can play, first of all, for itself. Secondly, for its neighbors, both north and south. Because we of Puerto Rico are American citizens of Latin American background. And it is the joining and the bringing together of these two forces through the concept of something new. And it seems to me that the difficulty really is that in this world of ours, the concept of narrow nationalism just does no longer have a place in this world.
I agree with you on that.
And we must find new ways through which nations must be, as President Kennedy said, interdependent.
I disagree with Mr.
And
Kennedy.
And I believe that the fact that the world does require interdependence, and that we're developing all sorts of markets, and we're beginning to see that we cannot but live this way if we are going to live on this planet, I believe that what we are doing in Puerto Rico under the concept of of the Commonwealth concept is a new creation, is a new kind of development which the people of Puerto Rico are giving to the United States, the people of the United States as a whole, who are completely unaware of this, and to themselves. And I would say that today you cannot use the Lamento Borincano as the theme song for Puerto Rico as we did up until 20 years ago. But I believe that if we were to become either independent or a state, and let me emphasize something, we the people of Puerto Rico, or we Puerto Ricans who feel this way, so that I don't abridge and talk for everyone, I'm going to use the word all, and I don't want to be like him. I can't speak for all Puerto Ricans. But we Puerto Ricans, I'm sure, have a great deal of respect for the concept of a federated state. This is a very adequate and federated.
Look, thank
my boy,
you, Joe.
We have a great deal of respect for the concept of an independent and separate republic, because this, too, is great. But what we believe is that it is just as respectful a status, the status of the Commonwealth. And the fact that we are still hamstrung by not being able to think beyond concepts of either and or, and hamstrung to the point where we can't think that there are new things under the world. And according to Ramon, this is not new because this had been discussed before. This is what we believe the concept of the Commonwealth provides for Puerto Rico.
My opinion is that if you want to create a real Commonwealth in Puerto Rico, freely associated with the United States, the President of the United States first has to proclaim the independence of Puerto Rico. And then Puerto Rico as an independent nation, as an independent republic, through a treaty, limit its sovereignty in the same way that has been done with other Latin American countries.
I have to agree with you because of this idea of a pact, that is, the people have been indoctrinated into the idea that it was a pact. You can never have a pact between a subordinate and a superior. The pact must be between two equals. And it's just like
we can become a state, we must also become independent?
No, not necessarily.
Why not?
No, not necessarily.
Why not? What's the difference? Why not?
Well,
what's the difference?
Well, give me a chance to answer you. Don't keep saying why not. Because after all, the concept of statehood is the ultimate that is arrived at from the territorial form of government to which Puerto Rico has already passed.
And the Commonwealth is a new form of state.
No, the Commonwealth is not a new form of statehood.
But it is.
It is a subordination still, because Puerto Rico is under the American flag without the letter that I wrote. The letter that I wrote
My question.
Just a minute. Now, this will answer your question. The letter that I wrote to Senator Byrd, I told him in that letter, I said this to him: I am bitterly opposed to the extension of any federal tax laws to Puerto Rico until and unless Puerto Rico has full representation in Congress. The contrary to that would be taxation without representation, which was the very same thing that sparked the American Revolution.
But there are no taxes being extended to Puerto Rico. You're mistaken about this bill.
You're wrong. No, now remember that I'm a Puerto Rican just like you.
Puerto Rico is not mentioned in this bill.
Just a minute. The excise tax is being collected in Puerto Rico now. The customs is being collected in Puerto Rico now.
That's right.
All right, well, don't say that there are no American tax laws there.
Come on, you talked about a
letter.
Just a minute,
let me finish the statement.
Well, let me clarify.
Let me finish the statement.
Go ahead.
Now, but what happens is this, Mr. Moderator, and that is that that is equated by the fact that the Treasury, the United States Treasury, reimburses Puerto Rico annually in an amount equal to the customs receipts
that are
gathered at the ports and the excise tax.
That's right.
This is a new thing that Senator Byrd is trying to extend to Puerto Rico.
I
say, unless we have our full quota of 4 or 5 members of the House of Representatives and 2 senators, this would be taxation without representation. And I object to it.
There is a mistake here. I'm sorry, this law does not extend to Puerto Rico. This law does not extend, it doesn't even mention Puerto Rico. The law will have an effect on Puerto Rico because there are industries there who have their parent company here. But per se, the Congress of the United States is only by indirection taxing in Puerto Rico.
Well, that's what I'm talking
about. And we are against that very definitely. But let's be clear that this law is not a law which in any way, shape, or form even mentions Puerto Rico. This is the problem, that it hits Puerto Rico without even thinking about it, and this is why we object to it.
Since we are at this point, we might as well clarify it this way. Individuals are subject to tax, to income tax in tax haven countries, but corporations are penalized by increasing the levy on them because of these subsidiaries, either by indirection or whichever way you fix it, it's the same thing.
I want to revert to a very important point, which has been raised both by my friends here. It's the matter of American citizenship on Puerto Rico. As for Don Ramon, he says that the extension of American citizenship to Puerto Rico responsabilizes the government of the United States on taking Puerto Rico's role in the road to statehood. And Mr. Montserrat and the Popular Party and the government of Puerto Rico establishes very clearly that American citizenship is the basis of permanent association with the United States. Something like the loyalty to the crown in monarchical states. But both of them, I believe, are mistaken, because American citizenship can be resigned and can be revoked. In fact, a federal prisoner is not a citizen of the United States. It's alienus de jure subjecti. So American citizenship does not mean, and moreover, not being a complete citizenship, but a colonial citizenship, limited colonial citizenship, is not a base for permanent association, not for opening a road to statehood.
We're going to remain within the United States in any form of association. Any Puerto Rican that is really, that has the pride of his island, should aspire to the highest political status within that association.
Right. You have been listening to a discussion of the political future of Puerto Rico. Participating were Mr. Joseph Montserrat, Director of the Migration Division of the Department of Labor of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, Mr. Juan Antonio Correter, President of the Party Advocating Independence, Mr. Raymond Martinez, a candidate from Congress from New York City. The moderator was the UN reporter Walter Nixon. This is the Educational Radio Network.